Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, Big Town? Hey!
How we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, part-time Brendan behind the glass. A Wednesday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. So, Blankers, I was thinking about this last couple of days. We know what's at stake for the Houston Texans on Sunday. This is one of the most important games in Houston Texans franchise history.
Wow, you're going to go that far.
Do you detect any lies? Do you detect a lie? This is one of the most important games in Houston Texans franchise history. There's so much at stake.
Let's see, there was the Chiefs game.
Sure.
There were the playoff games.
How'd that work out for them? I didn't say it was the most important game.
I know, because I'm trying to say.
It's on the short list of most important games.
If it was like within the top five.
Top 10 for sure. No doubt about it. Top 10 most important games for the long-term interest of the Houston Texans. Is it not? I mean, a lot of people love Bryce Young, right? I mean, I like Bryce Young.
I think you're adding some caveats as we go, but that's fine.
That's not adding a caveat. That's what's at stake. I'm not adding caveats. Yeah, I am illustrating the stakes.
You said, because initially you said one of the most important games in franchise history.
I stand
and
by
then
that.
You added to it
one
of
that.
The most important games for the future of the Houston Texans.
I mean, it's one and the same. How's that different?
Because one is, in the history of the franchise, there were some massive games that had nothing to do with their future except for the fact that they could possibly go to a Super Bowl
every
or win a playoff game.
Every game has something to do with your future. Every game has something to do with your future. Like, if you're playing in a Super Bowl, you're looking forward to hanging the banner, to having a parade, to the ring game, caps and shirt game, all that.
I don't think he's using important for the future to take away from how important it is as a whole.
Yeah.
He's just using that as why. I still think he's wrong. I think top 10 is probably silly.
No way.
Top 25, maybe.
Top 10. Top 10 most important game in franchise history coming up on Sunday in Indy.
I would think if they hadn't been here and done this kind of thing in the past, and you can argue how well they did it, I would think that it would have even more importance that you know, they could say, well, we could do this again. We've done it multiple times and succeeded. Now we've got a chance to lock up the number one seed and get another franchise-altering player. But it's the Texans. Everybody expects them to screw it up.
I know. They do.
It's become the norm. Like, it's almost humorous. It's not like an adjective to where you get a Texan. You could actually Texan this, you know.
I already told you yesterday I'm placing a bet for the Texans to win this game on the money line. The 3-point dogs, I'm not taking the points. I'm taking Texans money line to beat Indy on
Sunday. Now, if this game was on a Saturday, I would have a more likelihood to think that the Colts would blow them out. Because Saturday on a Saturday, you know. They would get a big lead early. But I think Saturday on a Sunday, maybe you're right. All bets are off and the Texans can win.
No words.
I'm back.
I don't know if that's what you want to use to illustrate that you're back, baby. Anyways, does anybody in Houston want the Texans to win on Sunday? Like, I'm hard-pressed to find that person. I really don't think it exists.
See, I think it always exists with Texans fans.
713-780-ESPN.
There were Davis Mills fans, after what we witnessed from the majority of the year, that were still hanging by a thread, that were still believing that somehow the Mills Mafia was going to pull this thing out and he was going to be some kind of superhero.
Well, I mean, if you want to go to the embrace the suck movement that you started really 2 years ago, more and more people have joined. Whereas if you go into week 18 of the NFL season, there's not many people that are left. Because embrace the suck's losing games so you can guarantee a high draft pick. Right now as we enter and we're in week 18 of the NFL season, I don't think that anybody exists in the city of Houston that hasn't fully jumped on the embrace the suck. I want to find one person that wants the Texans to win on Sunday. 713-780-ESPN. Be that one person. Be the one. How many people are in our city? Millions? I don't even know.
Millions.
I should know million. That. I should know that. Be the one of millions.
Let's guess.
To want the Texans to win on Sunday. 713-780-3776. Isn't it close to 8?
I was going to say 8 million in the city of Houston.
I should know this. I'm embarrassed that I don't.
That was my guess is 8 million.
How many people are in the city of Houston, Brennan?
He doesn't
Why
know.
In the world am I the one to
How
know that?
The hell? This guy's like part-time as it is, and he's a trick.
How in stupid. The world is... I'm an idiot. We're both idiots.
How
like
many?
We should probably quit now.
6 million.
You're an idiot too. You're an idiot too. We're all way
3 million.
Wrong. Price is Right rules. We've all lost.
We're way
still
over.
Continue to
we
lose.
Went way over.
Yeah, we're dumb. We're stupid. Don't listen to the Killer Bees.
No, 3 million.
Hey, shut your mouth on the last comment. I mean, people listen for stupidity.
Yeah, they listen for our sports. They don't listen to us for our general trivial knowledge. It's like 2.3. We're way
Does that
off.
Include all the surrounding
areas? At least
that's,
areas? That's what Google says. Google says that the population of
Brendan,
Houston,
what do you got?
2. The metro 3. Is 6.7.
What?
The
what Houston is Google metro. Talking about?
There you go. That's exactly what I thought.
I Googled how many people...
Now who's an idiot?
Man, now I feel better, but now I feel dumb that I called myself an idiot for my initial guess not being that bad.
Yeah, now, so
who's
the
idiot
us,
now?
You, because you were getting the wrong information and putting it out there.
How does this happen, though? I Googled how many people are in the city of Houston. Quick search says 2.288 million as of 2021. Explain that to me. How does that work? Where did you find your information?
I just know that I trust Brendan a whole lot more.
I searched how many people in the Houston metro, and it was the first Google answer.
Man.
Everybody knows the first Google answer is all you need.
I think it's 2.3, bro.
Wikipedia says 6.9.
I think that's including all the suburbs and the Kingwoods and the Woodlands and...
Yeah, the metro.
I mean, like, every single one of these off Google, every single one Google search, 2.3 million, 2.36, 2.31. The current metro area population of Houston is 6.7. Like, I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea. Let's stick to sports, right?
Look, can we just go with the one that makes us look the smartest? So I think the 6.7 is close.
What's the text line telling us here? Anyways, we've gotten off point. Somebody said that Paul Gallant should call, and he's probably still here. Maybe Paul could come in and explain to us why he wants the Texans to win on Sunday. I don't know that he does. I don't want to put words in Paul's mouth, but I want to find the one person in the city of Houston that wants the Texans to win. If you are that person, please let us know. 713-780-ESPN, our HRP listener line, 713-780-3777. Let's break all rules of radio, especially since we have no idea how many people are in the city of Houston. The show's already off the rails 8 minutes into it.
That's the way
Let's
we do
go
it.
Out to the HRP listener line. First time in the history of this program that we've taken a call in our opening segment.
That's not true.
But we found the one person. Yes, it is.
No, we've taken a call in the first segment before. We mistakenly did it.
I don't think I did.
Oh, yeah. We've done it at least once.
I don't think I
because
did.
Because we regretted it after we did it.
Huh. Anyways, maybe the second time. I think we found the one person that wants the Houston Texans to win on Sunday. 713-780-3776. Jeff, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. Why in the world do you want the Texans to win on Sunday? He's speechless. He doesn't even know. He can't even tell
you
us.
You called him out.
He can't even tell us.
You put too much pressure on him because he thought he was the only guy, and he bailed on us.
He bailed on us.
What did I tell you about taking calls in the first segment?
It's a bad idea.
This is why
we don't break the rules of radio. You know what we were doing? We were toying with the radio gods, and the radio gods proved to us never toy with the radio gods. 713-780-ESPN. There, you know, I do know one person that wants the Texans to win on Sunday. Lovie Smith talking in his media press conference talked about, there's not much difference between the number one pick and the number two pick. And I get that. And this was Brendan's, like, cash it or trash it yesterday, where he's like, you can still be happy with the number two pick in the NFL draft. Sure, you can. Like, I realize that is, you're still going to get a very good player. I get that. The thing that I always look at whenever it comes to this, though, like, if you're just drafting basketball teams, like you play pickup basketball every Saturday, mm-hmm. Do you want the first pick or do you want the second pick?
Ooh, it depends.
You're not doing a snake draft. You're not doing the whole silly 1-2-2-1. Like, it's just a standard 1-2-1-2-1-2.
Yeah,
exactly. Because you want the dude that is the best. Could you get a good pick at number two? Sure, you could get a good pick at number two.
If you give me two at number two, then it's a different story.
Or you just say, let's say you and I are going to a steakhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Would they bring the steaks out to us and they say, you pick your steak that you want the chef to cook. Do you want the first pick or do you want the second pick?
I want the first pick.
How about his dude that's grilling hot dogs on the grill? You want the first pick, you want the second pick. You always want the first pick no matter what you do. Can you be happy with number two? Yeah, you can be happy with number two. Halloween candy. Somebody sticks out 5 pieces of Halloween candy in front of you. All are very different. You want the first pick or you want the second pick?
You want the first pick.
The reason that you want the first pick is to guarantee, to ensure all of those synonyms for having the top pick. You want that to guarantee who you want. If Nick Caserio wants Bryce Young and all of a sudden the Texans win on Sunday, you're not getting Bryce Young more than likely. If you want to use that pick to trade down, more value at one, more value at two. There is no sense. And look, I understand the players, the coaches, they want to win a football game. It's their livelihood. It's their job. It's their profession. I get that. And I'm not saying the Texans need to go out there and, like, figure out ways to lose. They don't need to have Chris Brown take a one-day contract and shank a 25-yard field goal to guarantee the number one pick.
Kamie Fairbairn's perfectly capable.
He's had a good year. He has. He's had a good year. He's had a really good year.
You just love fighting me.
No, he does. He's had a good year. Now you could.
Well, it's about time.
And you could also point to the fact, well, it's been low stress all year long because who's paying attention to Kyemi Fairbairn? Absolutely nobody. True. So the low stress aspect of him kicking this year, I think, probably plays a role. So it's not like this perfect argument of Kyemi Fairbairn should be a Pro Bowler. He's kicked on a bad team that's been in low stress situations all year. I don't need low stress kickers. It's like having a closer on a bad team. Who cares, right? Who cares if the Pittsburgh Pirates have a great closer? 713-780-ESPN. They're like, y'all can't come up with a reason, right? Like, there is no reason the Houston Texans should win on Sunday. Like, we're all there.
Absolutely none.
I just don't. I don't see it.
There's no moral victories at this point. You're looking towards the future, as you said. You're looking for the best case scenario for success in the future. And whether that future is next season or beyond, it means getting the best football players you can in that locker room. And that means you need to get the number one overall pick. Should you trade down to get multiple picks? That's something you could discuss later. You need to have the options, and the best options are with having the number one pick.
713, go ahead.
You guys know there's areas where I disagree. Like, there are portions of Embrace the Suck that I disagree with.
Uh-huh.
But when you're this close to the finish line,
lighting in the tunnel.
Yeah, there's no case to be made that you should be rooting for them to win.
Like, now, Robert and Tomball says that he's rooting for the Texans to lose, but he's a Colts fan.
Be the number one, be the first Texan fan in the city of Houston. There's my caveat. Be a Texan fan. Be the only Texan fan in the city of Houston that wants the Texans to win on Sunday. I am looking for you. We want you to call into the Killer Bees. Be that guy. 713-780-ESPN. Our HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Also on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham on Twitter. How important is it losing this week? Difference between 1-2 and we're looking for you, the one Texan fan in this city that actually wants the Texans to win on Sunday. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Answer to the great debate. Greater Houston area has 7 million or so. 2.3 within the city limits of Houston. So it depends on how you define it. But I know that you've all been dying
to
know.
What are the city limits, per se?
The city limits.
Beltway
the city,
8?
The wall around the city.
610 or inside the loop?
I would have to look at a key map.
Now we're going
and
way
I
too
never
far.
Have experience. I've never had experience with a key map, although I'm sure that you have.
That's not very nice to say.
Have you?
I don't think so. I'm one of those. I'm very tough on directions, and even now I just call Lisa.
I remember printing out directions on MapQuest. That's how
do
old
you really?
I am. Yeah, absolutely. I remember printing out directions off MapQuest. I do remember that.
I think that, like, especially now when we go on remotes, I just plug it in my phone now.
Well, sure.
I do that.
Sure, but I'm talking about like when I started to drive. Like,
yeah,
and if,
yeah.
Like, yeah, yeah.
I've printed stuff off MapQuest.
Have you?
I feel like I'm probably starting to get you're much younger than me, and yeah. You're probably not going to find it, but I definitely did that.
I mean, it hasn't been within the last 15 years.
No,
I remember when I was driving
like,
early.
High school, college for me, probably.
College for me, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, 713-780-ESPN. Is there a Texan fan in this city that wants the Texans to win on Sunday?
I've had multiple Colts fans chiming in that they want, which I understand.
Yeah, that's the other thing about Sunday's game is it not only affects the Texans, it also affects the division rival Colts. Like, you could directly impact the Colts draft positioning in the draft as well. Something to keep in mind. 713-780-ESPN. Are you a Texan fan that wants the Texans to win? Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Jeff, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. Why do you want the Texans to win this weekend?
I want the Texans to win because the Chicago Bears will not draft a quarterback at number one.
Jeff,
they can trade it, Jeff.
Did they turn trades off this offseason? Is that something that they toggled to the off mode? Like, what are you talking about? They can trade the pick.
And I don't want Davis Mills. I want him to kick 3 field goals and win the game.
Okay, Jeff. Jeff's reasoning is so
Jeff,
Chicago
kinda,
isn't going to draft.
You kind of ran from the obvious,
yeah.
Which is you forgot that trades can be made, and the Bears most certainly than any other team probably, except for maybe like a Jags, and they're looking for a playoff spot. They're going to trade down, still get a defensive player, and get more picks.
Every single time that I see somebody on Twitter say, well, the Bears aren't taking a quarterback, I put my forehead firmly into my palm and just drive my elbow into the table out of frustration. Did they turn trades off this offseason? Did Roger Goodell say no trades no trading of draft picks. We're going to be like Major League Baseball. You can't trade your draft picks. Bears are stuck to number one. If the Bears end up at number one, they're probably not keeping the pick. And it's probably more likely that somebody's going to trade up to select a Bryce Young if Bryce Young's your cup of tea.
Yep.
5'7" cup of tea.
Easy there, mayonnaise and coffee guy.
I'm curious, though, what his I cannot wait for his combine just to see the measurements on Bryce Young.
And we haven't even started talking hand size.
I've never been more interested in the measurements of a man than I am on Bryce Young late February, early March. The hand size,
hand
the
size is going to be in there,
the
too.
The weight. Cannot wait to see Bryce Young's numbers.
Yeah, if he's 180 again, and he's undersized, and yep, God forbid he has small hands.
6 foot, under a 9-inch hand.
Boy.
Good game. Nice knowing you. 713-780-ESPN. And do you really want the Texans to win on Sunday? Jeff's reason was terrible, because the Bears aren't drafting a quarterback. They're going to trade the pick, Jeff. 713-780-3776. Back out to the HRP listener line. Travis, you want the Texans to win. Why?
I don't want them to win. I mean, even if they do win, and I'm agree with the other guy, and if they trade the pick, I don't like Alabama quarterbacks. Tua is hurt. Hurts is hurt. The last Alabama quarterback that was actually any good was probably Joe Namath. I'd rather have C.J. Stroud that's, 6'4", if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But the reason why I like to have that first-round pick, if you also think about it, correct me if I'm wrong, but Miami lost their first-round pick, so we'd be getting the 32nd pick, which is technically in the second round at a second-round price.
Travis, let me ask you this. Let me ask you. It sounds like you like C.J. Stroud, and the positive for the Texans winning on Sunday, and the Bears would have to lose in this scenario too, is now the Bears are at number one, Texans are number two. You don't care about Bryce Young going number one because you're a C.J. Stroud guy, but what if a team around the NFL falls in love with C.J. Stroud, and now Stroud's off the board, he was Caserio's top guy, and you're left there at number two with your pants in your hand with no quarterback to take?
Pants in your hand?
Well, then you know how stupid the Texans are. They'd probably take that Alabama quarterback and not Levy or whatever his name is from Kentucky.
I like Will Levis. Now you're talking my love language, Travis. Now you got my attention. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, Travis, go have a coffee mayonnaise.
It's good for your health.
Murph Dog brings up something that came to my mind as the only way that it would make sense is someone could bail the Texans out if they trade up over Houston and take Bryce Young. If everybody truly believes the measurements matter and that Bryce Young is just too small and he's not going to work out, because then the pressure's off of you to either take the guy and run the risk of him failing or take somebody else and run the risk. Now, if someone would trade up, if they win and then someone else, and then the Bears get the pick and they trade down and someone else takes Bryce Young number one, do they do you a solid because now you don't have to worry about it?
Maybe, but that's kind of like, That to me is not a good reason, because if Nick Caserio is sitting there on draft day and his favorite target is C.J. Stroud, what guarantees you to have C.J. Stroud, the number one pick and the number two pick? It's what we were talking about a little bit earlier. Like, you have to, like, being that top dog, having the number one pick guarantees you the guy that you want. And, like, we just throwing out Bryce Young because Bryce Young's the most popular player at number one. He's the odds-on favorite to go number one. So we're using his name as the example, just putting him there. But if Caserio loves C.J. Stroud and he's in there at two, well, he's kind of keeping his fingers crossed that somebody doesn't trade up to draft C.J. Stroud, even if he likes him more than Bryce Young. Now, what it can do is it can take the pressure off of you.
Yeah,
and I think that's probably where he's going with is, like, okay, there's a lot of pressure to take Bryce Young. If he does go Bryce Young, you weren't the team that passed on Bryce Young.
Well, and this is where it goes back to when I was talking about whoever Nick Caserio's gut tells him to take, after all the research and all the workouts and everything that they witness, he needs to be set on one guy. He needs to know the one guy that he prefers, because the last thing that he wants to do is get into a situation where he feels the pressure of everybody saying, you have to take Bryce Young, but he had someone else in mind that he would rather have taken instead. And then you're caught in a conundrum, and you know, that's where it could do you a solid. Hey, someone's going to take the guy that you, because we all know, and you've talked about it. Look, in his past with New England, he likes the prototypical quarterback measurables. He likes 6'3", 6'4".
We
don't know definitively, right?
That's a theory, I think, at this
point. But it looks like his history with quarterbacks is always about, except for Tyrod Taylor, a lot of big quarterbacks, all right? We've heard Sean Payton talk in the last couple days about now it's about, you know, that prototypical quarterback, even though he had Drew Brees who did wonders for him. But you wonder, you know, at a certain point, we've seen the failures from the Johnny Manziels to the recent history of Baker Mayfield, where the size matters again. So you know that he, if he truly feels like size matters and this is not the ideal guy for me, he's probably looking for a bailout because he knows all the pressure in the world is going to say Bryce Young's the guy you got to take at one, and if you don't take him, there's going to be more heat and energy than they've already felt over the last couple of years in a negative manner coming the way of the Texans and Nick Caserio.
Lamont makes it – I forgot about this point that that Travis just said that I wanted to bring up. He says – so this guy says he doesn't like Alabama quarterbacks because – he actually said because they got hurt. He didn't say because they weren't good. He said because they got hurt. Mac Jones is a rookie. And look, Mac Jones I think is like – I don't think Mac Jones is a top five quarterback. You can make the case that he's outside the top 10, but he was a playoff quarterback his rookie year. Like, let's not dismiss that. That's a solid production. Tua had Miami playing like a contender in the AFC before, sadly, another concussion. And then you look at Jalen Hurts, who, look, he was an Alabama quarterback. They got benched for Tua, but Jalen Hurts right now is top two, top three MVP voter in the NFL and maybe the best team in the NFC that could take his team to the Super Bowl. So, like, the injuries there, I don't buy that. And also, if you're going to talk about Alabama quarterbacks, like, being a product of the system, not having success in the NFL, the most recent three have actually been pretty good. Give me a list of Ohio State quarterbacks. Justin Fields, like, has come on a little bit this year, but they're in the mix for the top pick in the NFL draft. You can throw out Cardale Jones. You can throw out Dwayne Haskins. The list goes on and on with Ohio State guys more than Alabama guys. So if you're going to, like, besmirk Alabama, you can't talk out of both sides of your mouth because you have to mention Ohio State's history as well.
It's the reason why lately we've made the case for both schools in that when you're talking about Ohio State, just like you're talking about Alabama, there's something to be said about the fact that you're throwing to first-round draft picks that get 5 to 6 yards of open space when they run routes, as opposed to other guys at other schools that don't have the luxury of having Bentleys and Porsches on the you know, wideouts to be able to throw to.
Day and age in the NIL, they're driving those things too. 713-780-3776. Do you want the Texans to win? Are you the one person in the city? So far, I've heard two terrible calls, two terrible reasons as to why. Let's go back out to the HRP listener line. Mike, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. Why do you want the Texans to win on Sunday?
I think Caserio needs to take a deeper dive into looking at Bryce Young's history of massage therapy before he decides to draft them. I'll hang up.
I don't know how that's a reason for the Texans to win.
How the Texans should win.
I don't understand. And look, if you're anti-Bryce Young, that doesn't mean that you should be anti-number one. That means you should be pro-Nick Caserio having some bravado and some guts and some cojones to not take Bryce Young at number one. You should still want the number one pick. If you're a Stroud guy, if you're a Levis guy, you think they should be the pick at number one, then you have pick number one and you hope Caserio gets it right according to your opinion.
And what have I been saying all along? I just want Nick to be, like, set in his ways, not let anybody else alter what he's thinking, and go, I'm focused on one guy. I found the one guy that I believe is the guy, then go get him. Instead of worrying about what everybody else thinks or what everybody else says or, you know, being caught in between a couple, focus on the one guy you want. If you end up with the first pick in the draft, go get him. Or make sure you're going to get him no matter how you finagle the first round of the draft.
713-780-ESPN. Is there any reason the Texans should win the game on Sunday? I just don't see it. I don't think we've heard one yet. I really don't. 713-780-3776. Any reason that you want the Texans to win on Sunday? Also, there's a coach out there on the coaching carousel. It goes by the name of Jim Harbaugh. He's thirsty to get back in the league. How would you like him as the next head coach of the Houston Texans? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Does anyone actually want the Texans to win on Sunday? Battery Chuck, I want on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. I want the Texans to win. He lists three reasons. One, because it will piss off the Embrace the Suck guys. Sounds like you have a personal axe to grind there, Battery Chuck.
That's not shocking with Chuck.
Two, the Bears would take Anderson or Carter at number one, and the Texans would take Young or Stroud. That's making a conclusion that we don't know exists. Why wouldn't the Bears trade that down maybe to like number three? You're still going to get an Anderson or a Carter, especially if you think the Texans go quarterback. Three, the Bears won't trade down because no one will give up that much for the number one pick this draft, especially after what the Rams did. Here's why that's confusing to me, because everybody tells me how Bryce Young can walk on water. Everybody tells me how Bryce Young's a generational talent, how he has pinpoint accuracy, which ain't the case. I've watched enough.
Now, everybody's not me, because I've been realistic about this.
Yeah, I mean, I like Bryce Young, but generational talent, pinpoint accuracy, now you're just kind of like, but even if you believe those things, here's the point. Like, if you believe those things, if there's a certain percentage of people that believe those things, and a certain percentage of people do believe those things, why wouldn't somebody give up a king's ransom to trade up to number one, especially after what the Rams did? Like, the Rams won a Super Bowl, and the Rams didn't even trade up in the draft. They traded for Matthew Stafford. Like, that's an apples to grapes comparison. That makes no sense to me. Whenever there is high demand, especially for a quarterback, the number one pick's going to have a tremendous amount of trade value. If you just look at it from a trade value perspective, let's eliminate the draft pool for a second. But the trade value angle of looking at the 2023 NFL draft. Pick number one versus pick number two. You have what 25% of people are saying, maybe even 50% of people are saying, is a generational talent, pinpoint accuracy, a can't-go-wrong prospect. Bryce Young's going to change the franchise of whatever team gets him. And then at number two, the team picking after the team that picks that generational talent. If you just look at it from a trade value point of view, it's like having $1 million and having $250,000. It makes no sense for the Texans to win on Sunday, and I still haven't heard a good reason for the Texans to win on Sunday from a Texans perspective.
Yeah, look, I mean, when you think about this, no matter what you think the draft is going to play out to be, right? And no matter how you think it's going, the thing is you want, and we've talked about this over and over again, when it gets down to any kind of draft, you want to be in a position of strength and power. The most powerful position in every possible situation is where you have the higher pick. When you have the ability to pick at the first pick of every single round of this draft, and it's not, again, we're focused on quarterbacks, so we're focused on the first round and the first pick.
You would agree, though, that, like, even if you don't think a quarterback is the best player in this draft, that they command the most return.
That's what I'm saying. Yes, yeah. Yes. So now, again, because you're not having a draft like last year when the best possible quarterback was going to go late in the first round, this is where there are now multiple, which you love, because if you're sitting at number one and you know there's possibly three or four, but let's narrow it down. There's three really legit possibilities that could go number one overall. Now you got people clamoring all over the place because each team probably could focus on their own guy. Maybe multiple teams on one guy. Maybe there's another team that says, no, they're an outlier, but I like this guy more, but I still want to move up to make sure I get my guy. Now you're in a really strong, powerful position of strength because you can still get your guy, but you could possibly manipulate the first couple of picks to make sure you get extra draft capital and still get your guy. And I always refer to the Danny Ainge analogy with what he did in the NBA. He got his guy and got an extra first-round pick. I'm not saying that's going to be the case, but you want to be in that position rather than hoping and rabbit's footing that the guys in front of you aren't going to trade the pick to a team that wants your guy and that your guy's going to fall into your lap.
9656, I want Texans to win because I bet the Bears would have the worst record in the NFL before the season. All right, that's a good reason, but it's not a reason for the Texans. Now, I understand and can respect how you know you're selfishly rooting for you to win your bet. I would too, but that's not from a Texans perspective. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Back out to the HRMP listener line. Roger, you're in the hive of the Killer Bees. What's going on, Roger?
Not too much, guys. You got me at the convenience store. Just give me a second. My issue is...
Hold on, Roger. Yeah. Hold on, Roger. What are you buying at the convenience store?
Buying a bang energy drink, and some veggie chips to go with my Subway sandwich.
Lunch of champions. I love it.
Get some gum, too, because your breath's going to be horrendous.
They're going to kill you over there.
All right, Roger, what you got?
Anyway, so y'all compartmentalizing the wrong way about the draft. We know what we need. There's so many holes to fill, but quarterback one is the most evident, okay? So let's just go with that.
Okay.
I mean, what evidence has Nick Caserio given us to proceed forward thinking he's going to go ahead and do the right thing? He's not. Look at Sauce Gardner. I mean, it was such an obvious move. You go with Sauce Gardner, that's the guy who's been injured most of his career.
I see where
and
you're coming
you
from.
Go, boom. And I'm not talking about three agents. I'm not talking about other round draft picks. He did okay. But we have to judge him on the most important grade that there is to judge him. That's his first round pick.
Roger, let me ask you this, because I understand where you're coming from. Frustration with Caserio not getting picks right. I get that. It's fair to criticize number two. It's fair to criticize Kenyon Green. But let me ask you this, because it's a numbers game, right? It's a numbers game of having pick one, having pick number two. Did the Texans have if you wanted Sauce Gardner in last year's draft, did the Texans have a better chance of selecting Sauce Gardner by having the number two pick or by having the number four pick?
probably number four pick.
Okay, he went number three. Or I'm sorry, he went number four. He went number four. I said that wrong. If you had the number, appreciate the call, Roger. The point that I was trying to make is that if you wanted Sauce Gardner in the draft and you had pick number five, you're not getting Sauce Gardner. But there's a shot that you get him at number three. Now, the Texans picked Stingley over Sauce. We wanted Sauce. I think it's still way too early to make that call. Sauce was sitting in a cover two. We know the story by now. But if you have a player that you prioritize in a draft that you really, really want, the better chance of you getting that player is to have a pick in the range where he goes as opposed to having a pick outside the range. If it's Bryce Young that you want at number one and you're picking at number two, well, you've cost yourself. If you don't want Bryce Young, then you hope that Caserio can get it right. I can understand the frustration of him not being able to get it right, and you have some hesitation and frustration of him not being able to.
But see, I disagree with Roger in the fact that you can't exclude the other rounds of the draft and just focus on the first pick in the first round that the team has. You have to look at the overall draft to say, how does Nick Caserio do analyzing talent and selecting hit the guys he wants? Because overall, I'm continuing to be a guy that believes he did a pretty damn good job last year with his first full draft with this Texans team. So I believe he can evaluate talent. But that's why I've been focused on him making sure he deeply dives into evaluating all these quarterbacks, if that's truly what he's after, and making sure he gets his guy. And that's the case when we're looking at Sauce. We said, I kept saying, there's a whiteboard. You and I kept saying all along, we wanted Sauce. But look, we know overall, week to week, everybody's going to be comparing the two. And unfortunately for Texans fans, at the end of the year, Sauce Gardner looks head and shoulders above Stingley. And there's a variety of reasons why, right? Because they didn't play the right defense for him. He didn't play enough man because he's been hurt. Or even if he wasn't hurt, they're holding him out, making sure he's ready when they're ready. Whatever the case may be, Sauce looks like a major win and a major miss for Nick Caserio. You can even go so far as to say the second first-round pick is under question with Kenyon Green because of the fact that you took a guard that high for one, and then for two, he hasn't looked like he can do anything other than run block, and even that sometimes gets suspect. So I understand from a first-round perspective, this is the exact opposite of the Rick Smith philosophy when he was general manager. They said he couldn't miss on first-round picks. He got those right. But the rest of the draft is where he struggled mightily. It's almost like a flip shot. But even here, Caserio's looking like he can't get a first-round pick right, and that's worrisome to people, even if you get the first pick overall.
He's had two. Stingley, Sauce doesn't look great right now. Kenyon Green doesn't look great right now. 713-780-ESPN. Still haven't heard a good reason of why it's good if the Texans win on Sunday. 713-780-3776. Back out to the HRMP listener line. Blake, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. Why? Why do you want the Texans to win Sunday, Blake?
Hey, just to follow up on the other gentleman, kind of similar on my hot take. Nick Caserio cannot be trusted, but just a deep dive, and my reasoning is that two options. If you keep Lovie Smith, then I don't think we need to drop a number one overall pick. But, of course, you know, the first overall trade down, that you get more picks there. But second, if he fires Lovie Smith, and then you have to take into account that that's two head coaches he fired in consecutive years. The heat that he's going to get for drafting Stingley over Sauce as well is missing, that he's going to be on the hot seat. And my biggest fear with a GM on the hot seat is he's going to overreach. And the first overall pick, he's probably going to overreach for a QB when I want him to trade those down. So I think that put more pressure on Nick to show that, hey, I could make the selection, and I'm going to make the fan base happy if he's on the hot seat. So that's my take.
Appreciate the call, Blake. And I get that take. I really do. Like, if you're of the belief that Jalen Carter is the best player in this draft, that Will Anderson is the best player in this draft, it makes more sense of having number two than number one.
Sure.
Because you do, like, especially in the city of Houston where you need a quarterback, or people desperately want a quarterback just for, like, the interest of rooting for the team, they want a quarterback. The public pressure would be greater at selecting quarterback at number one versus quarterback at number two. But this is like, this is what I've been saying all along, is that whenever you have a general manager, you should never be listening to the fans. You should never be making a draft pick based on public pressure, perception, butts in the seats, those sort of things. You should be focused on making a team better and eventually fielding a winning team. And if you think the best interest of the Texans is going defense with number one or trading down with number one, then that's what you do, and everybody yelling at you and, you know, trying to send you out of town and fire you, whatever. That's a part of the job. That's the, you know, criticism that you have to deal with. But if you feel it's in the best interest, you do that. So if you think going into this draft, I need defense, I need Carter, I need Will Anderson, is it easier to do at number two? Yes. Is it better for the overall benefit of the Houston Texans having the number one pick and either going that direction at number one or trading down a few spots, still getting a defensive player and getting the extra draft capital for a team, like he said, that has so many holes all across the board?
No question. That's why I keep saying, in every round, but in particular, focus on your guy that you want in every round of the draft, and then you plan accordingly. Sometimes, like he's done in the past, trade up, even with a third-round pick, to get guys that he wanted. Or, you know, to make sure, like you said, get in a certain area. But you look at the Bears, and you look at panic mode, to the caller's point, too. When you get a Nagy and their GM a year ago or a year and a half ago, when they realized they screwed up on Trubisky, they realized the clock was ticking, they realized they both were going to be shown the door sooner rather than later. So what did they do? They started trading away future draft capital to get another quarterback to take one more swing at it. Even if they were going to get fired, they realized whatever we give up, we don't care because we won't be here by the time those picks are lost. We're trying to save our jobs as opposed to save the franchise. That's what you have to be worried about. But with Caserio being on a six-year deal, I don't think we're there yet to where he has to worry about his job. So then he damn well better get his type players.
People were calling for his head, what, 4 weeks ago?
Yeah.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Still haven't heard a good reason for the Texans winning on Sunday. Let's get to that Harbaugh stuff, too. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. I did say that, yeah.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what it means.
Okay.
I was kinda,
it just sounds provocative.
I was kind of vibing right there.
Hey, Will Ferrell, I don't know what it means. Provocative.
Why do you want the Texans to win on Sunday? I haven't heard a good reason. We've had people try. I haven't heard a good reason. I don't think a good reason exists, to be honest with you. Q Mommy on Twitter, he tweets us and says, winning is a culture. You owe it to the other 51 guys to win. Look, I'm not telling the players to go out there and lose the game. I'm not telling Lovie Smith to call a game where they're awful and they're going to lose by 20, or Pep Hamilton to intentionally tank. I would never call for a player and a coaching staff to intentionally tank. I'm saying that as a fan, you should be hoping the Houston Texans lose on Sunday. But I want to talk about the winning as a culture thing. The Houston Texans right now enter the final week of the season with two wins. They're 2-13-1. If the Houston Texans finish 2-14-1 or they finish 3-13-1, is that going to have some sort of positive momentum into 2023? Is that going to build this winning culture within the pillars and the walls of NRG Stadium over there at Kirby? A win in Week 18 does nothing in terms of culture or positive momentum carrying over from the end of one season to the start of the next.
It absolutely does not. And again, this is a situation that may be a little different than a year ago, but very similar in the fact that we could honestly say how many of the guys on this roster are going to be on that team next year where it could carry over if there was any carryover at all. Last year, you could say pretty much none. This year, well, with the exception of Burkhead. But this year, when you look at it, you could say, you know what, the draft class is going to be back, and we like a lot of those guys, and we think that they're going to be contributors for a long period of time. But other than that, it's still a very low number, and the turnover is going to be very high because you still have the worst roster in the NFL, and you're continuously building. Now you've got a ton of draft capital. You know those guys are all going to be immediately injected into the locker room to where you're going to change the culture yet again, no matter what, because of the fact that you're bringing in so many new personalities. So it would be one thing if you said, hey, we beat the Chiefs a couple weeks ago. That's a monumental win where you can say we're building things to where for next season we could say when we get things right, we can compete. But you didn't beat the Chiefs. You didn't beat the Cowboys. You didn't beat those teams that could have been monumental, even the Browns, those monumental wins for the franchise. Now in Week 18, it could be a win that, you know, changes the fortune going forward. No way.
I was going to even say there could be value to winning Week 18 if you were playing a team that was playing for something important.
Like if you prevented a team from getting the number one seed.
But didn't the Texans do this last year when they beat the Chargers in Week 16? Like, was that a monumental win? Because that didn't carry any momentum
into
this year.
No,
Why is that different, though?
I'm not saying it would be monumental, but if you're beating a team that plays for something, I think there is some value.
Like the Texans did to the Chargers in Week 16 in 2021.
But it's just like there's not monumental value in picking one over two. They're small things. I think both of them would be small. If they were playing the Jags or Titans, who were playing for their division, and you get that win, I think there is some level of value in that. If you beat the Colts, who also don't want to win, there's no value in that.
Well, but I will say how it carries over to the first part of the comment, Jeremy, is I could say to you, look, in week 18, if we were playing a team like New England that had to win and get in, and we beat them, and we sent a message that, hey, you know, from a overall locker room perspective, we can gather the troops, and we, even if it doesn't matter for us, we can beat a playoff team that had everything to play for in the last week of the regular season and say, you know what, that's something you can build on going, that's why in this locker room there's culture. That's why going forward we've got kind of the building blocks where we can build on that, add more from a draft perspective, and that's the kind of team that we want to have every week going forward. You can have some sort of momentum.
I think that's baloney, though. Honestly, I really think that's baloney.
I'm not saying that it's not, but I'm saying that's something that where you could say a week 18
like that would be your sell. Like if you're playing devil's advocate here. I'm trying to figure out like why that's any different than beating the Chargers when they were in the playoff race in 2021, and now you're one of the worst teams in the NFL, and hopefully the worst team in the NFL.
Because I don't think enough teams looked at the Chargers like a Super Bowl contender.
I don't know about that.
I think, but if you beat the Chiefs this year, or because there's that extra added benefit of being in Texas with the Cowboys.
But what if the Texans did beat the Chiefs this year? Does that all of a sudden change our tenor on the Texans? It didn't change my tenor on the Texans.
I think a lot of people would be a lot more excited about this team going forward if they had beaten the Chiefs.
Man, not mine.
Do you believe there's no value whatsoever in a winning culture? That's just a genuine question.
Absolutely not. I'm very close to the Houston Cougar men's basketball team, who is like they thrive on culture. I think culture matters a lot.
So
I don't think that culture is defined by two or three wins in a single
season.
Not
standalone wins. Not standalone wins. If you feel though like you've played,
I don't think the wins at all build that culture.
Sure,
I think the culture is built before the games are ever even played.
No, I don't even necessarily disagree with that. But if you felt like down the stretch the Texans had kind of taken it to another level, like that they'd started getting close, I think, sure, does the actual win matter? No. But playing well enough that they win because of it, could.
The Texans were, I mean, they were there a couple weeks ago to y'all's points, right, against Kansas City and Dallas. If the Texans would have squeaked out those two wins, and we're looking at this team right now with four wins as opposed to two, they squeaked out those two wins, they just got hammered by Jacksonville, does our feeling about the Texans change? Because it doesn't change mine one iota. Not at all.
Well, but I think you always remember the last thing that happened from a season when you move forward, right? So you're right. If it's in week 16 or week 15, it can lose the magnitude of the win against the Chiefs if you crap the bed the rest of the season. But if in week 18 against a playoff team fighting or trying to be a playoff team, a team fighting for its playoff lives, you come in and kick their ass, I think that you can look back on that and say, hey, you know what? We finished the season strong and we came together. And we beat a team that had everything to lose in the last week of the regular season that was trying to get into the playoffs. But you're right. It doesn't have the same kind of luster and momentum if it happens in week 15 or 16. It could be the Chiefs. It could be the Chargers. The Chiefs, because of Patrick Mahomes and because they're a perennial Super Bowl favorite, it's different than the Chargers. But I see your point in saying, hey, look, they were an up-and-coming team. Everybody was talking about Herbert. They were talking about this team could really be a sleeper. And then they fell asleep on the Texans and got buried.
Yeah, I don't know how it can carry over months from like the end of one season to the start of the other season, especially when the team's going to be so much different too. Like we're talking about two first rounders, three picks in the top, hopefully 32, maybe an entirely different coaching staff as well. Like there's so much that happens from end of week 18 to start of week one, especially in this organization, in this offseason. I just don't know how that exists. 713-780-ESPN 6030 says, let's say this, because if we didn't draft a quarterback this year, how far back does that set us from drafting a game-changing quarterback who's down the pipeline? Look, I'm not opposed at all to drafting quarterback. I don't want a quarterback at number one. I'm team trade down, draft. I would like three quarterbacks. If the Texans end up with Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, or Will Levis, I'd be completely happy with all that. I just don't want a quarterback at number one. I want to trade down, get more draft capital, take the quarterback of those three, and you have to position yourself nicely to do that. As far as like who's down the pipeline in the future, a lot of people love Caleb Williams. I love Caleb Williams' game. The attitude is kind of rubbing some people off the wrong way. What he put on his fingernails in the Pac-12 championship championship game, F-word Utah, has rubbed some people the wrong way. There's some red flags there, admittedly. Some people love Drake May as well, and there's reportedly college universities offering $5 million mm-hmm. for Drake May to transfer. Drake May decided not to. And I know that I talked up Caleb Williams a few weeks ago. I do want to come out of this draft with a quarterback. I want to come out of this draft for the Houston Texans one of those three quarterbacks. I just don't want it to be number one. I want to trade down, get more draft capital, and then figure out which of the quarterbacks is still there whenever you're on the board. And look, I don't want to trade down far. I want to trade down from one to like four, five, six, and then draft one of those three who's ever left.
And I think that, look, there's nothing that prevents you, regardless of whether it's the norm or it's looked at favorably or not, in going quarterbacks 2 years in a row. I don't think that there's enough on this roster currently or what you're going to add within this draft, no matter what you do with each of these picks, that you're going to be substantially better than you were this year. So you could, again, be in the ballpark to take another quarterback a year from now, and whether it's Caleb Williams or one of the other quarterbacks, depending on how they're rated and how the season plays out, you could have other options. But that's the thing. You're in a position of strength because you have options. Because as I've said before when we talked about this during the season, there's nothing that prevents you from trading one of those guys and getting back at least as much as what you used to get that pick in the first place or getting other players. But right now, I do understand the fact that you're trying to build a roster. And the fact that you have so many holes to fill and so much depth to build that there it's an endless possibility of things that you need as opposed to things that you have. So if you're not enamored with the quarterbacks or you take a quarterback that you're somewhat enamored with or you think could be good, you can trade down, get a guy, but still get more extra draft capital to get more guys that help your roster. And then a year from now, if you're in the same position,
yep.
go get the guy you truly want. That other guy still has value.
And even if he doesn't have value, you're still ultimately getting that franchise dude. I mean, you hope that whoever you draft this year is that guy. And you're probably not planning for 2024. I can understand why a GM wouldn't do that because, I mean, look, Casario's got to start producing.
Right.
But you're hoping you hit on that quarterback. But it is a fallback plan. And you have two first-rounders next year as well.
And you don't want to end up in a situation. It's different if you're Denver, right? And you're going for your franchise quarterback. You're giving up a ton and you're getting a veteran. This way, as long as you, no matter what means you take to get to the road of getting your franchise quarterback, if it's using two first-round picks 2 years in a row, but you end up getting that guy and he's going to be there for 7 to 10 years or more, then you've achieved your goal, and that other guy still has value to you, but probably more so to other teams.
Two first-rounders for a franchise quarterback is, like, cheaper than the going
rate.
It's
just like a trade.
Yeah.
You just made a trade to trade up.
2662 with a great point about culture. Culture should influence the game more than the game should influence culture. That's deep, and it's right. 713-780-ESPN. Mike Golic Jr., we had his old man on the show a couple months ago. The young Golic, Golic's son. I might have brothers. I don't know. Mike Golic Jr. of DraftKings will join us next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.